All right, guys. Hey, this is Anthony Bandiero. We're doing another Search and Seizure podcast here, the Search and Seizure show. We're going to answer your questions live. We also have some questions from Officers Around the Nation. We have a pretty big audience here right now. I'm joined by my good friend, co-host, John Ween, senior legal instructor for Blue to Gold. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing great, sir. I'm down here in Laredo, Texas. I'm going to be doing some work with Texas DPS the next couple of days, so having a great time.
Man, what a dream. Laredo, which is, you know, historic place, and also Texas DPS. I was about to say, you're in a hotel, so either A, you got kicked out by your wife, or B, you're teaching for us.
The odds are pretty much 50-50.
It's 50-50. It's 50-50. Zach Miller is also with us. He's a search and seizure instructor for us as well. Extremely bright guy. You can't see him today. He has his, he's not able to have a camera at his location, but he is mic'd up. What's up, Zach?
Hey, not much. How you guys doing?
Good, good, good. So let's dive right into it. So here's how this works, okay? So everybody that's here, this is how this works. If you have a question, you take priority. So any search and seizure question, we'll also try statutory interpretation. We'll take a stab at it. You know, that's not our forte, but we can probably answer some stuff. So all who wants to ask a question? All you need is a microphone. A camera will not even be turned on, so do not worry about a camera. All right, so who has a question? So while I'm all right, so Daniel, stay right there. I gotcha. I have to control that part. So you're gonna see a request to turn on your mic. Hold on 1 second. And when I get you on, just tell us where you're, what state you're from. And we can kind of go from there. All right, Dan, what you got?
Hi, I'm from, I dare say it, Iowa.
Ah, yo, the land of bad case law. Okay, I know what you're talking about. I got you.
So my question is, I guess it pertains to curtilage.
Yep.
I had a situation today, actually. We're working a case with a surrounding county. Lots of burglaries between multiple areas. And we hit the search warrant on this house last week. Anyway, today, there was an item leaning against the house. It was a large 5-foot-tall tank that was not suspected of being a stolen property when we did the search warrant, but now it is. So the question is, with that being in plain view from the street, leaning against the house, would we need a warrant to go get that? We haven't done it. I'm leaning towards the curtilage issue where we need it, but I just wanted your interpretation.
Johnny, take a stab at it.
So I'm a little confused, brother. You had a search warrant, but you executed the search warrant and now you're done with that. And then now more information is coming up and you're like, oh man, that tank that was leaning there is actually stolen property. Is that where we're at?
That is correct.
Okay. Yeah. So basically what we're going to, you need, you know, on what you're saying, it sounds like it is not going to be in that, that Girl Scout area, correct? It's not going to be in that path, that walkway, that, you know, the directmost path to the main point of access from the street. Is that correct?
Right. It is leaning right up against the house, probably 5 feet from the driveway.
Okay. So yeah, you're going to be in your Collins versus Virginia area, right? You're going to be in that red area and you're going to say, yeah, I'm going to need a warrant if I want to get back there, or some other kind of recognized exception. Are the people in the house, is it possible at all that they would give you consent to walk up and grab that?
They are in custody for those previous charges, so the house is vacant.
Okay. Well,
you can still ask. You can get custody from people in custody.
What do you think about that, Anthony? What if we have an officer on a cell phone go talk to one of the people? Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what we teach here. So if you're getting consent from somebody in custody, we recommend two things. Number one is to get it in writing and, you know, let them know what you're looking for, what you want to do. And then when you get to the house, call them on a cell phone and say, hey, look, we're here at your house. Thank you for your cooperation. As you know, we just want to kind of grab this tank and go, whatever it is, and keep them on the phone while you do your business. Hopefully that's feasible and doesn't take too long. And that way, if they have any questions, comments, or concerns, or want to revoke or modify the consent, they can do it. And they can't complain later that they wanted to from their jail cell, but they weren't unable to.
Perfect. I appreciate it. Thank you.
But before you go, Dan, John did say something that I want to see where, make sure I got this right. John, why, okay, let's say it's in the Girl Scout area, okay? and your intent is purely to recover evidence against the homeowner, do you think the Girl Scout rule applies at that point anyway? I mean, or are we outside the Girl Scout rule?
No, I think that, well, so here's the issue, right? Well, I think this is interesting, right? So let's talk about this, Anthony, because we've had spirited discussions about this before, right? And I know Zach has very strong opinions about this. I am of the mind that the subjective intent of the law enforcement officer is irrelevant, right?
And sure.
I am also
how you act. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm also of the mind that Horton versus California tells us if you are in a place that you have a lawful right to be and you have access to contraband or evidence, something that's immediately apparent as fruits or instrumentalities of a crime, you yep. can seize that item, right?
Okay.
And so if I am going up in the yellow, as we teach it, during yep. a normal time when people would be expected to receive...
While they're in jail?
What's that?
While they're in jail?
Okay, sure. But at the same time, so you're saying, well, you know that nobody's home, and so...
Yeah, he knows. He knows there's nobody home.
Right? Doesn't matter?
I'm asking you. Do you think it matters?
It does not matter. A pollster,
Zach,
a door-to-door salesman, a Girl Scout can do...
No, but the door-to-door salesman would probably... If the door-to-door salesman knew that somebody wasn't home, I mean, look, maybe we're splitting hairs here. Zach, before I give you what I think, what about you, Zach? What do you think if under these if the tank was on the porch, could the cops go right up to the porch, take the tank and leave without knocking on the door and trying to contact the homeowners?
Well, so first of all, John is correct. I do have some strongly held beliefs on this topic. I think subjectivity does matter, even though the Supreme Court has said it doesn't, but then they say it does. So they're not very helpful in that regard. I think the key here is we know there's nobody home. And I don't think we can go up there under the Girl Scout rule, the knock and talk rule. I think that implied license that we're relying on, it just isn't going to apply. It's similar to Hardiness and the dog, but not the same thing. But I think it works.
Well, it's similar as an implied license. Implied license is a form of consent, right?
Yes.
So where is the consent? How, Johnny? How are we going to argue this and say, you know what? We have an implied license to go up there and seize evidence against the homeowner. Why do we have that authority when we know that they're probably not going to authorize it? And I will tell you just before you answer, Johnny. So the way I look at subjectiveness is actually the way that the Ninth Circuit does, and I don't often agree with them, but they said when subjectiveness comes into play, because if the intent is something that you can't do, then objectively it's not appropriate. Is that you know it's like so subjectively you want to go up there and get evidence, and the reason why it's objectively improper is because you just can't go to people's curls and start grabbing evidence against them when you're not really there for another lawful purpose as envisioned by the homeowner. What say ye, Johnny, to that? What's your rebuttal?
So I look to Alito, right? And Alito said, we have never held that the subjective intent of the law enforcement officer matters in a Fourth Amendment analysis outside inventory or an administrative search. Right.
Yep.
It
yep. Yep.
Matter.
No. Yeah. Yep.
So if you look at it purely from a legal standpoint and you say, oh, I know that people aren't home. You don't know that. And even if you did, it's irrelevant. Can you?
But it is. But it's not. It can't be irrelevant. You're saying that if you go up there, you're fine. You don't know anybody's home. You're right about that. Well, yeah. Are you even telling officers to even knock on the door? Or are you like, shit, guys, don't even knock. Just take that tank and just leave. What do you want them to do? Either way, they're good.
So yes, either way, you're good.
Come on.
How about a performative knock and talk? Let's at least just do a performative knock.
Can
and
we
talk.
At least so, act like we're doing a knock and talk?
Sure, but it doesn't matter, right? That's my point. Is it doesn't matter? Do you have a legal right to go up there onto that porch and knock on the door?
Yes.
Yep. So go up and do it.
So okay. You're saying at least knock.
Sure.
But you don't think it matters.
I don't think it matters. I do not.
You think that the officer can just, the security camera just shows an officer going up to this area on curtilage. We have to agree it's curtilage and just grabbing that stuff and leaving.
Yep. Could a Girl Scout, could a Girl Scout walk up on your porch and not offend established social norms, even if she doesn't knock?
No, it would be, you would be offending me if you don't, if you come on my curtilage and your intent is just to stand on my and sit in my seat and stand on my bench and just look around my property, maybe, you know, look at my window while you're there because my window's on. If you do that, you are trespassing. You do not have my consent to do that. You should know that you have no implied license to come onto my porch and just hang out there.
But you're adding a whole lot of facts there. You're talking about wandering around and looking at windows.
But why would you? But okay, no, I'm saying you are trespassing. A reasonable person would know they are not invited there. I'm just saying, like, you're constitutionally, at least, you know, you should know that you don't have my implied license. Just go onto my curtilage and then just for the, with the intent, subjective intent, to not even try to contact me.
Subjective intent doesn't matter.
It does matter here. It does matter. It matters. No, look, fine. It doesn't matter. Fine. Okay. I'll take it away. It doesn't matter what you think. It matters how you act. Okay. You went onto my property, my curtilage.
Yep.
You stood on my porch, and when I asked you why you did it, you said just because.
Yep.
No way.
Okay. So let me ask you this, right?
Please.
If I'm walking up to your door, agreed?
Okay.
I'm going to encounter this evidence before I get to your door. Yes or no?
You're walking to my door. You're going to counter it before you. Yes. Okay. Fine.
So I'm walking up to your door. I encounter the evidence. I pick it up. I turn around and leave. Okay. I had a right to be standing there. Yes or no?
Say it again. The last part is what?
I had a right to be standing there.
What was your intent when you got on my curtilage?
My intent doesn't matter.
Yeah, it does matter. Matters. It matters because do you have my implied license to be there? You don't have my implied license to just go onto my curtilage and just grab evidence and leave. No, you do not. You do not have my implied license to be on there.
It's an implied license in our society to do no more than what any member of our society could do, which is walk up, knock on someone's door, wait briefly for admittance, and then absent invitation to linger longer, turn around and leave. But you just answered it.
Linger for what purpose? To see if you've been accepted, to be received. You're not being received.
But I accomplish what I'm there to do before I get to the door.
All right. I'll bring up a case on this. But I'm a little shocked that Sean's liking this. Okay. Dan, let me tell you what the answer is. Okay. Get a warrant. Don't listen to Blue to Gold. Your ass doesn't get sued. You listen to us. You're donezo, man. You'll be out of a job so quick. Listen to John.
Yeah.
I was leaning towards the warrant on it. I was having a debate with the officer, and I just wanted your guys' opinion.
Yeah.
Well, you got it.
Best practice is what? What's best practice?
Get a warrant. The warrant's the best practice. Yep.
No reason to get consent.
All right. Good job. All right. Thanks, Dan. It is a good comment. I'm only busting chops around here. It's a good one.
You guys will never see me again on a podcast, but it's been fun, right?
I'm shocked. I'm shocked.
You can't have it both ways, Anthony. You can't say my subjective intent matters, right? You can't say that it doesn't, and then you can't.
Kyle wants to know subjective versus – I'm going to let Zach answer this. Zach, explain to Kyle subjective versus objective.
Something is subjective if it is based upon a person's sensibilities or feelings, how an individual identifiable person feels about something, which can include their intent. Objective is fact-based, based on the facts. It's fact. Objective is fact-based. Subjective is we probe someone's mind, want to know how they feel. And generally speaking, objective is the standard under the Fourth Amendment, except when it isn't.
I know. Who's the Kevin here? We have a few Kevins. I'm just trying to pick the right Kevin. Who's the Kevin that had a question? Kevin. Okay. Thank you, Kevin. All right. What state you're from? Oh, while you talk, let me go grab something real quick. Go ahead. Talk.
So I'm from Washington State. New officer to Washington, but I've been in law enforcement for about 4 years now. I have a case where a mental health counselor is messaging a 14-year-old off of her personal phone for non-counseling purposes. The parents believe that there's some nefarious intent, that there may be illicit messages being sent, but the daughter constantly erases the phone at the direction of the counselor. So the parents want to do a voluntary phone dump to try to find deleted messages, deleted pictures, hidden stuff on the phone. The problem is that the aunt of the minor bought the phone for the minor, gifted it to her, pays for the phone service, pays for the iCloud storage, manages the apps that are allowed on the phone, but does not have physical control of the phone. The parents want to hand over the phone, do a voluntary phone dump, but we're not sure because the phone was bought by somebody, given to the minor and managed by a third party, if we need a warrant or if we can just use parental consent because she's 14.
Zach, you want it?
Yeah, thanks for the tough one.
It is a tough one.
These are tough. A parent has, there's that hierarchy of authority inside the home where the parent has the greater interest and greater privacy and possessory interest over the child. But now we have, some outside third party buying the phone. I mean, there's no question the child has an expectation of privacy in the contents of the phone, but there's also the parental role, which, would suggest in a properly functioning family where mom and dad actually run the program inside the home. It would have been better, obviously, if mom and dad bought the phone, or they at least pay the bill, or they have access, they know the password to the phone. I'm kind of leaning towards we're going to need to get a warrant for this.
Now, what about that? What can the aunt? Can the aunt give? Did the aunt give consent? Or
I don't think the aunt can, because she doesn't
have a privacy interest. Yeah,
she has a possessory interest, perhaps, but not that privacy.
Perhaps, yeah.
Yeah, if it was mom, not aunt, that had done all this, and of course it could. But yeah, I'm thinking now, because the parent has no real access to this phone in their own right. Yeah, I'm thinking warrant.
Now here's the other thing too is there's no standing from the suspect, right? So
the child.
Are we charging the child or the counselor?
Yeah, the counselor. You're right. There's standing is an issue for the.
We don't have automatic. You wouldn't get any kind of standing here. So if the cops are like, hey, look, we got the parents' consent. The aunt is probably in on it too. Let's just kind of split the difference here and say that we can do this. We find evidence against the counselor. He still gets convicted because he can't contest the search, right? I mean, you got that going for you.
Yeah, what state is this, Kevin, again?
This is Washington State. We currently have no criminal charges, but we're basically fishing just to make sure that there is no criminal aspect before we just close it out.
John, doesn't Washington have automatic standing though, John?
They wouldn't have automatic. He still wouldn't have automatic standing under these conditions. He would still need a possessory interest or a lawful presence in the place search and so forth.
Yeah, we're not charging him with possession of anything.
Yeah, right. You're right.
I didn't. That was a tough question, right? For me, 14-year-old has, yeah.
But so you don't have PC. That's why you're going this route, because you don't have PC?
Correct. Supervisory staff says that they want to clear all avenues before we close the case, because 6 months down the road, this pops back up and there are illicit messages. We didn't do anything. Now we have egg on our face. Allegedly, there's 4 or 5 other kids that the same person's been communicating with. None of those parents want to come forward. So we're kind of in this gray area where even our prosecutors have kind of shrugged their shoulders and said, yeah, I don't know.
Who's the source of this information?
The parents are the original RP. Daughter volunteered some information but didn't want to give full disclosure.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this and I say, there's nothing good happening here, right? There's not the counselor is telling the 14-year-old, delete your chat history so your parents cannot see it.
Exactly.
Right.
So look, I would personally just talk to your prosecutor and say, hey, look, you can say we talked to your search and seizure guys. They think that it's a debatable case, but because you have no PC, so no warrant is available, the guy's not going to have standing. If this person is, involved in improper behavior with the kid, he really should, answer for that. And so I would personally, because that's not clear either way, I personally would lean on the side of just downloading that phone with the parents' consent and get the aunts too, just to throw it in. But that's what I would do. And just, charge the person accordingly.
Thank you.
I'll get your prosecutor to back it up though, because you are Washington, which is a tough state. I'm in Washington, by the way. So I'm in Spokane. All right. So I got a quick, all right, you ready? I got a quick meme for you. You ready? So What federal agency am I? Hold on. Huh? What am I?
Where's the explosive?
Well, it's just standard ATF. I'm old school, baby. Okay? I'm at explosives. Hey, maybe I do have explosives here. You know what I mean?
What's the joke? Yeah. It's ATF. They really, really seem to care about alcohol and tobacco.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, if I opened up a bar, I would definitely call it the ATF. Okay. So, all right. So who's next? Who has a question? Oh, look, let me. Okay. Actually, who's next? I'm going to bring up a case. But who's next? I think Emmanuel had a case. Manny. And then if somebody else wants to be on deck, let me know.
And Kevin, did you copy Melissa's comments in the chat, buddy? Talking about HIPAA and ethics breaches for counselors, things of that nature. You should check into that, man.
Beautiful. I think I had the right Manny. Manny, is this?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
Just another day.
And then, okay, the next Emmanuel has another one. What's your question, my friend?
All right, man. I got a crazy question. It was not us, specialized unit. I was like, I don't know if that's okay. I don't think so.
Well, coming from you, it's probably not. So let's just get it over with. You know what I mean? Let's just talk about the rights you violated last week.
Nah, man, I'm good. I'm not even working this week. I'm in instructor school this week.
Oh, nice. Nice. Okay, what you got, brother?
They get a search. All right, I got two. Okay, the search warrant for a house.
Okay.
For some reason, the car is not listed in the driveway.
Yep. I know. Yep, this classic scenario. Yep. Yeah.
I know. Mm-hmm. I know you know. They bring their canine, and they scan the car in the driveway, and then they search the car. And I was like, search warrant for the house, but it doesn't. And I know in warrant you have to specify what you're going to search and where. And then I don't know that was brought like we're having a discussion and that was brought up to me, and I was like, I don't think that's okay, but I can find out for you.
Right. Right. Okay. Who wants to take this?
John, go ahead.
Go ahead, John.
So, Anthony, you and I have talked about this before.
Yep. Right?
And in our discussion, the vehicle is a container. And so it is on the physical property that's listed in the search warrant.
Yep.
And so if it is reasonable to believe that the evidence that you have probable cause and what you're looking for is identified in the warrant, then it is reasonable to search that container while you're executing the search warrant.
I think the easiest cases too, John, are the ones where the car is actually on the curtilage. But I don't, you know, I think courts are generally speaking endorsing even if it's just on the property. If it's on the legal property, and you got a warrant for that property, then you search any container within that property. Zach, is that how you understand it as well?
I think you might need to have a nexus to the vehicle and then the property, but yes.
Oh, like, you mean like you can't search the UPS truck that's there delivering packages?
Yeah, or the guy that just visiting for the moment. But yes, and I'm putting a case in the chat.
Yeah.
This is pretty well established. You can search the vehicle as long as what you're looking for could reasonably be in there.
Which is tough because I know you list the vehicles in the search warrant, right? That's a common practice. That's a best practice. And so it is, reasonable to assume, ooh, if I didn't list that, then that's going to be an issue. But generally it's not.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's our rule, Manny. That's basically it's part of the, generally speaking, it's part of the house or part of the property. So it's searchable.
Got it.
And, as long as you reasonably believe evidence of that crime could be in that car.
Got it. And the other factor to it, that's what I wanted to know, if it was considered like a container. And I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm not really sure. So let me ask experts. The other one is they do the same thing, but it's an apartment complex, but the car's parked outside. in the like a parking lot. They scan the car there. The keys are in the house, so they beep beep.
What? Where's the car and where?
Like the parking lot, like outside, you know, apartment complex. You have like the
well, then
common.
Just, yeah, it's not part of the search warrant, but
yeah,
you can still
no.
search it under yeah. The motor vehicle exception.
Got it. That's the one I said I think he's good with because the motor vehicle. It was the house one. I was like, well, the car container wasn't really sure. I wanted to clarify, but
yep.
All right, sounds good. I appreciate
All
it.
right.
Thank you.
All right. Nice job. Always good talking to you, brother.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's try to get through a few more here. So next, Manny is on deck. He might be gone, maybe. All right. Who else is next? Was it? Okay. What's the first name? Is that the first name? Hold on. Brian. Okay.
Manny Coons is saying he's here.
Well, look, we don't have to know where Brian is. He has it on his avatar.
Hey, good evening.
Hey, good evening, my friend.
Hey, I'm from Florida. Question is, you see a firearm inside an unoccupied motor vehicle in plain view from the outside. Can't locate the owner, but you have intel flyers or informational flyers of that same type of gun being stolen in other cases. It's a high crime area where there's shootings and vehicle burglaries. Would that justify under community caretaking to try to take the firearm as safekeeping and maybe verify whether it's stolen or not?
Yeah. So, I mean, before, you know, maybe Zach will take this, but before, you know, you probably don't have PC. Would we agree with that? You don't have probable cause that gun is the stolen gun, do you?
No, just the intel flyers that matches a similar type of gun.
Yeah, you have reasonable suspicion, unless it's so unique, you know. I mean, Miami probably has some pretty damn cool guns with some elephant tusks, you know, grips on there and so forth. But let's just presume that you have maybe reasonable suspicion, but you don't have probable cause. Would that be fair?
Yes.
Okay, Zach, what do you think the cops should do in this situation?
Yeah, I think with no PC, community caretaking is the only possible justification for getting in there. I don't know. I know what the courts typically say. They typically allow it if it's like a high crime area. You have a reason to believe it presents a public safety threat. But I'm very cautious on these. Absent some good reason to believe that this vehicle is likely to be broken into, like particularly it's going to be sitting there for a long period of time, which you may or may not know, I'm very hesitant to say you can go in there and retrieve that gun. I mean, I'd be pretty pissed if that was my car. But
yeah, but you know, but you're leaving it in plain view though, Zach, right? I mean, you have to take some responsibility for leaving a gun, which is a highly valuable item that, you know, that people really want, and they'll break windows over it, right? I mean, it's not a right. I mean,
but I don't know that the government has a right to just, you know, the gun. I just, it doesn't feel right to me. I mean, unless I've got a good reason to believe it's likely to be stolen, but I think a court's probably going to side with the officer if he does take it. But
okay, what do you think, John?
Yeah, I've taken hundreds of stolen vehicle, you know, guns out of vehicle reports. I know that is number one thing for people going around burgling cars. That's what they're looking for. So if I walk by and I see a gun there, somebody's going to come by and steal it. If I can't make contact with the owner, I'm going to take it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not going to let that gun end up in the hand of a criminal that kills a cop.
Well, I mean, you talk about some hyperbole there. I mean, geez. I mean, you know, that's true. That is definitely an extreme case, but it's just probably good public safety to, you know, I mean, people are going to see that gun. If it's really like, if it's like, I have guns in my car, but you would really have to contort yourself to see it, 'cause I have tinted windows. It's underneath the dash. You know what I'm saying? It's, you know, like this is the gun I have under my dash. It's like a magnet on top of there. And
the slide, it slides out. Yep.
Yeah. It slides out. You know what I mean? And then it racks around right there. So I don't know. But you know, in Zach, in Dombrowski, I mean, the gun was, so it was an impound lot, and they didn't even see the gun in plain view. I mean,
it was in the trunk.
Yeah.
It was in the trunk. It was in the trunk.
Yeah, they thought it was in the trunk.
Yeah.
They thought it was in the trunk. Yeah. So, you know. So look, I think the cop gets some leeway here just to secure a firearm, and then if it's end up stolen, that's our answer there. I do agree with Zach. You know, especially in like super friendly gun culture places, like you know the farmer leaves his ranch rifle, you know, in the back window, and cops are breaking his window to get it. It might be really offensive, but a gun in the middle of Baltimore, you know, well, that's probably a crime in itself, just having a gun in a car unsecured in Maryland. But a gun in Florida, just unsecured, laying on the passenger seat, I can see a court backing that up. You agree?
I agree. Yeah, I just don't like it.
Brian, anything else?
No, I appreciate the feedback there.
Just all right, cool.
Where it's at.
All right. So who's next? All right, there you are. I thought we lost you for a little bit. No, I still do not see you. Where are you? Hold on. That is weird. Emmanuel. Oh, I see why. Because you have your hand up.
All right. All right,
buddy. What you got?
Hey, how's it going? So I'm out of California. And the question I had was it's specifically for Wyoming v. Holland when it comes to passenger containers. So in California, after 2016, they believe it's Prop 64 when they legalize marijuana. It's no longer considered contraband. However, depending on how you possess it, there's like different provisions, you know, on carrying it and transporting it and so on and so forth. So the question that I have that I've been debating with other dudes that do the PC searches. Now, for example, I have lawful traffic stop. I locate open containers of marijuana. Say it's like a roach or, you know, just loose marijuana in the car.
Okay.
And I now then have the entire car to search to find additional contraband. However, say that there is a passenger in the vehicle, say a female, and there's a purse in the car. Now, under Wyoming v. Houghton, I have that purse because of the contraband. However, the marijuana is legal. So I don't know, do I have the purse? Say the purse is closed. If I'm searching for although the contraband is legal, the way they're possessing it is illegal. And I ask the same thing when it comes to
that. That's actually a good question. You mean like she has loose marijuana in her purse?
Yeah,
she could probably do that, right? That's what you're saying. That the argument is that even if you found what you're looking for, it's never going to be illegal anyway. Right, because she can have loose marijuana in her purse.
Well, and under the provision, you can't have the marijuana loose. It has to be sealed.
No, it doesn't have to be sealed. It has to be in a container. We know it can be in a sandwich. It can be in a sandwich bag without a Ziploc.
Exactly. So I guess my question is, like, for example, say it's meth. I find Plainview meth in the car. Okay. I have all the bags in that car from the other passengers all day.
Sure,
My question is the fact that marijuana, the actual contraband, it's not considered contraband. It's just illegal how you possess it. So the provision,
sure,
it's not.
It's an open container violation. But okay, let me. But hold on. I've never seen a case on this. But let's say I have a backpack. This is a great example. Okay, I have a backpack, and I have, you know, what? How much can you have in California? Is it less than an ounce, or is it more than? What is it now?
No, it's an ounce. It's 28 and a half.
Okay,
grams.
So let's say that I put an ounce of marijuana loose. It's not even any container, but I put that marijuana in my backpack. Zip it up. I don't think I'm violating the law. Do you agree?
That's correct, yeah.
So that's why the purse is interesting, because what are you going, like, in other words, even if they did have loose marijuana in the purse itself is the container of the marijuana, right?
Exactly. Yeah, so that's my thing is like, okay, say I'm searching under Halt and I'm searching that purse and I find a gun now. Like, would that throw out my, would that suppress my gun?
I think you have a problem.
Because technically,
I think you have a problem. I think, I think California courts would be very receptive to this, I think, a very clever argument, right? You're looking for something, your PC, you're basically, you know, you don't have PC for the purse, because even if you find what you're looking for, it's not going to be illegal in that purse. Now, if the purse is open, let's say it's just open, right? The top is open. It's not zippered up. Do you think that changes that container to now it could be illegal? If there's loose marijuana, I feel like
yes, it would. Yeah, because now I can under halt and look into that purse because it's now it's an unsealed container, and then say I find more loose marijuana, and then I find say a firearm. I feel like that case would be good. My thing is under halt, and would I have that purse or backpack if it's closed, but I have the search of the car and the containers in the car, specifically for marijuana, because that's a lot of our ways to get in for PC, especially. I mean, everyone thinks like, oh, marijuana is legal, I can have it. However, that's our way to get in, specifically in California. But that 100%. One is the one I'm struggling with.
So, yeah, and I think I never thought about this, but it's a great question. Let me ask you this. You stop a vehicle with an open container of alcohol. It's right in the center console. It's Boom's Farm. You know, they're rolling around in a Genesis. This is high level stuff right here, okay? Do you think that you can look into the trunk for more open containers?
I would say so, but now you would have the trunk is where you like say it's an unsealed, you know, bottle of whiskey. Or the seal's broken, it's supposed to be in the trunk.
Correct. You just answered the question. So it's not illegal to have open containers in the trunk. You would agree?
I agree, yeah.
Then and that's why you can't search the trunk. So that is what's going on here. Even if you say, Your Honor, I believe I have probable cause that there's loose marijuana in that closed purse, the judge should be like, well, it's not illegal. The purse itself is the closed container, right?
That's right.
So that's there's probably a defense attorney on here right now saying, thank you, Anthony, we're going to win a lot more cases. But one thing is, you did say a roach. Didn't you say like a marijuana cigarette?
Yeah, which is also considered open container because it's not in a sealed container. So like,
well, I'm going down the road of not just open container. Look, clearly a roach, a marijuana cigarette is against the law in marijuana. I mean, in California, because it's not in a closed container, right?
Correct.
But I think you have evidence of smoking and driving. Now, I think you need a little bit more, but smoking and driving is a different issue, and you can maybe look for more evidence of them smoking while they are driving. Maybe that's is that a stretch, or would you think that has legs?
No, that one's good, and that's typically how we would do it. You know, that fresh smell versus the burnt. I guess mine is particularly if I only find just cannabis, loose cannabis flower, or even a roach, and now I have other backpacks in there. Do I have those backpacks if they are closed?
If all you have is an open container violation, right?
Probably not, right?
I've never seen a case on it, but I just don't know why it doesn't work. At the end of the day, it wouldn't be illegal even if it was open, if the marijuana was open in that backpack, loose in a...
Okay.
And it just wouldn't be illegal because the backpack itself is a container. I don't know why the court would not consider that as such.
I agree.
And also look, maybe chat with Max. Max is maybe has some extra information for you, but Max, can I throw you on here real quick? Do you want to add anything to this conversation? Or Max, can you please help us out here? Okay. Hold on. I'm spitballing here, but this is okay. Max, educate us what we should know here.
That goes into a whole
bunch. A little louder. You put the microphone closer or whatever. It's low.
It goes into a whole bunch of different laws. Not just
no. You're like, you have like a telephone wildlife. With a string on it.
Yeah, he's in wildlife.
Say it again.
Hold on.
Are you in the field right now taking down a grow op? The mic is not working. Hey, let me... Okay, I would like to talk to you, actually, but here, just call me real quick, if you can. Hold on. All right. Hold on. All right. So why I try to get... Man, come on. Hey, Max, just give me a call real quick. Let's. You know, if you have something to add, I want to kind of deal with this now so I can learn. Oops. Nope. Hold on. Okay. Call me. All right.
Okay, sorry about that.
Yep.
So it goes into a whole host of different sections within both the vehicle code and the health and safety code in California right now. And it's gotten super touchy because of the legalization and what is an open container, because it is under the vehicle code, but it's not under the health and safety code. So it's a really convoluted topic, and it becomes very situationally driven at this point.
I agree.
So there really is no clear answer on, there's no standard answer on what you can or can't do or when you can't search. But I would argue that just a roach in a car is not going to give you PC to search the rest of the car.
Why? Well, not, you can't look under the seat. You can't look in the glove box. You can't do any of that. You can't.
I would say it depends on where the roach is at.
Ashtray, right in the center console.
Is the ashtray open or closed?
Open. We saw it in plain view.
Which is something that we see a lot. I mean, especially these gangsters rolling around, they have it. Like, because they think it's legal. So they're like, oh,
right.
Where marijuana is legal, why are you searching my car? Well, hey, I have probable cause that you have more open, considering that the roach is an open container because it's not in a sealed container.
Yeah, I just think you're walking a fine line. I don't know. I don't have that specific answer. I can tell you that I wouldn't toss the rest of the car without any more reasonable suspicion or PC that there's more weed in there. I mean, I think if you have enough experience in dealing with marijuana, you can tell the difference between burnt and non-burnt marijuana. There is case law out there that was very bad for us where an officer did a really bad job testifying and they tossed it, but she wasn't able to articulate burnt versus fresh weed. And I think you can make that argument.
Yes.
If you have enough experience with weed. So I think if you smell what you think is fresh marijuana emanating from the car and the dude tells you, or whoever it is, tells you there's only a roach in the ashtray, then I would argue you have PC to toss the rest of the car. And because of how strong the smell of fresh marijuana can be, I would even argue you might have the trunk.
But hold on. Let me ask you this. If you see marijuana in the center console and it's fresh marijuana, you can see it. Okay. It's like, what do you call these? It's like a nugget or something. What do you call, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fine. Okay. You have a nugget. That's clearly a violation of California law, right? Bud, right? Can you search the backpack for more?
I have the driver's backpack. Like, say the driver who I'm detaining says, hey, that's my backpack. So then I have his because I can articulate, hey, there's probably more, you know, loose marijuana in his bag. But I'm talking more so about under Halton because we come across that a lot, especially with these gangsters driving with females. They'll stash a lot of their contraband or even firearms in the girls' bags.
Yeah. But that's hold on. Let's stay on point here because Halton is all about having illegal drugs, period. Wyoming, no drugs are legal. So, yes, we can get the bags. But what about my argument, Max, about, hey, you know, you can have loose marijuana, right? Can you have loose marijuana in a backpack as long as the backpack's closed and it's less than an ounce?
Because I would argue that that's still considered a sealed container as currently interpreted.
Correct. So I don't know how you get into the backpack to begin with. Even if you do find what you're looking for, what are you going to charge? What are you going to charge him with, Emmanuel? Like, you can't, like, right? I mean, what would you charge him with? I don't think it's illegal to do that. They can have marijuana in their backpack.
I guess I would also argue, and again, I have a lot of cannabis experience because I've been on a cannabis team for 4.5 years, or was for 4.5 years with Fish and Wildlife. But I would also argue that you'd be able to tell the difference in odor between one bud in a center console and a trunk full of fresh weed.
That's the key here. Yeah. Or even over an ounce.
In this case, in California, it's just going to come down to, what can you articulate and how far are you willing to push it?
Yep.
Because it is so gray in California right now.
Yeah. I mean,
it's even to the point, I'm a canine handler, and it's even to the point where we're not certifying canines or even having them on marijuana odor anymore because of the issue with the legality of it.
I agree with that. I mean, that's
just a real fine line at this point.
Cool. Well, look, I thank you for your time, man.
which I agree. I guess my biggest thing was because obviously Wyoming and Houghton you have.
Thank you,
brother. The contraband. The extension to the passengers or backpacks or however you have that. And I'm good with, like, obviously you have methamphetamine, you have stuff that's illegal.
Correct.
The gray area for me was just the marijuana. Since it's legal, it's just illegal how you're possessing it, how you're transporting it, so on and so forth.
Just go back. When you talk to your friends about this, remember, Houghton only just says you can search containers, but still you have to have the probable cause. If you don't have the probable cause, if it's not a crime to do what they're doing with that bag, then you shouldn't be searching it. Okay. All right?
I appreciate that.
I like what Max said, because he's totally right. It's all about this articulation stuff. When we don't articulate things correctly and we don't have reasons for what we're doing, then we have our problems. And I think that's key too. All right. Good job. I appreciate you, man. That was awesome. That's a very good conversation. And does anybody else want to ask a question before we go? I did have, while people are responding to that, I'll ask a question right here, just real quick. A guy from Colorado, he said, see you, buddy. See you, Brian. He said, can you use alternate doors to conduct a knock and talk? Basically, patrol officers have a call for service upon arriving at the front door. It does not appear that front door is commonly used. They said that there's items blocking the door. There's plants in front of it, maybe some cobwebs and so forth. Are officers allowed to attempt to locate a side or back door to attempt to contact with the reporting party? I don't know why that would be. That probably is even easier. But let's just say we're trying to contact a suspect, right? Is there a difference between the backyard having a fence, or is it just open with a walkway, et cetera, et cetera? So let's talk about using non-primary doors. That's why I kind of look at this, right? And you know, John hasn't seen a door he doesn't like. So John's opinion on this is that you can climb through the guy's bedroom window to make contact. You don't give a shit. So Zach, let's start with you.
Door, get up I mean, there. Yeah, yeah.
John is from Arizona. He's a honey badger. He don't give a shit, man. He'll do whatever it takes to fight crime. And then Joshua, you're next. Zach, what do you think about this? What's the rule here about using alternative doors, not using the front door?
Well, there's a split of authority in the lower courts. The closest we got, remember, there's a few years ago, we had that Carmen versus Carroll case where the Supreme Court was asked to address it, but they decided on QI grounds instead. But I think the majority position seems to be, and it sounds right to me, that if the front door does not appear to be the normal entryway into the house, like that's not how people normally go in the house, then absolutely you then look for where you can look for the right door. I mean, it just makes sense.
That was reasonable, right? I mean, some people, I've seen setups where I've seen many setups where people actually use the back door as their primary door.
Absolutely, yeah.
Johnny, I know it's getting late there and you have a big day tomorrow. Can you just help us with this? Do you agree with Zach, or do you have anything else to add to that?
No, I do. I think it's totality of the circumstances. And I think just be reasonable and tell me why is that the door, right? If you want to knock at a door other than the front door, tell me why that's the main point of access that people would expect an uninvited guest at. Are the cars parked over there? Are there shoes sitting out there? You know, the front door has got all kinds of stuff stacked up near it. Nobody would walk up through there, all these weeds and stuff. This is the door they use, and this is the door I went and knocked on.
I do have a case from New Jersey where the guy actually had a fence. The house was under surveillance. It was a drug house, so everybody going to the house actually went to the back door. You could argue they're invited guests, but the cops articulated that nobody was using the front door. It didn't look like a door that anybody really used. And they went through a gate. They knocked on the door. The guy gave consent. It was not only a marijuana grow, but also a meth lab. The court upheld it. They said under those facts, because the officers articulated that the uninvited guests, right, you know, the Girl Scout rule, that it was reasonable to believe that the backyard, even with the fence, was where the general uninvited guests would feel comfortable going. And that's the key here. Joshua, where are you from? You're muted. You're muted. So just unmute yourself. There you go. And hopefully it's working. Josh, you see the thing popping up saying unmute? Josh is having technical difficulties. You want to just call me, Josh, real quick, and we can answer your question, and you'll be the last one for the night? All right, Josh, and then did that work out, John, with the calling on the cell phone? Was it clear on my?
Yeah, as
my
long phone? As you held it near the
phone. Okay.
Yep.
All right, Josh. There he is. Here, hold on. Put you on speaker. All right. Hey, buddy. You there? Josh, if you're a mute in real life and electronically, this is going to blow my mind. Now I can. I think you got some muting issues going on there, man. Can you imagine? Yeah, that's why he kept it muted, John. He was a mute in real life. What state are you in?
I'm in Arizona.
Oh shit. Well shit. We know whatever the question is, the answer is yes, you can do it, but let's just go through it anyway.
So an interesting one. I had I'm a supervisor and I had some officers respond to a gun that was found on a student at a school. And so the administration had already separated the gun from the student. The student was in the office. Had some officers go out there. They arrested the student. They took possession of the gun. They came back to the station. I made a phone call to our gun detective and just asked them what kinds of things that they wanted evidence-wise from us. And they were very insistent on the fact that they wanted the kid's cell phone, which, you know, makes sense to me.
Okay.
So I asked my guys where the cell phone was, and they said, oh, we left it back at school. So I sent a unit over there to go pick up the cell phone, but they arrived just a couple minutes after the parents of the student arrived. And the school said, we put the phone in the backpack, and the backpack is now in possession of the parents. So the parents were very hostile towards my officer as far as not wanting to give up control of the backpack. And so ultimately, they had the parents and the backpack stay in the office. I tried to make it clear to my officers, okay, you know, they can leave if they want, but they can't leave with that backpack. And then my plan was to have the gun detectives do a search warrant for the backpack, kind of like, you know, searching containers. And it's my understanding that they can, that we can, you know, forcibly remove that backpack from those parents. Luckily, it didn't come to that. But, you know, I'm running all these scenarios in my head as far as if we had to force this backpack from these parents if they're insisting on leaving, you know, and wait for that warrant. Luckily, when I got to the school, they turned over the phone to me. I think they just kind of wanted to be heard, and I gave them a chance to say their piece, and then they voluntarily gave me the phone.
Okay. I love it. That's a great. Is that all the facts that we need to know? Because I think.
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, Johnny, take the first stab at this.
Yeah. So you have, I mean, the question is, are you going to be able to convince a judge that there is probable cause, a fair probability to believe that there is evidence of a crime on that phone, right?
I think that's a good question. What do you just by curiosity? Are we good with that? I mean, the fact that he brought a gun to school, okay. But do we actually have probable cause for the phone too, or is that just kind of just a comprehensive?
Yeah. I'm gonna say yes.
I ran.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. That was a question I ran by our detectives, and they were very confident that based on the fact that, you know, he's a student, and you know they're always posting on social media and his training, their training and experience as detectives, that they could. You know, easily get a warrant for that phone.
Okay, they brag about it. Okay, Johnny's good with it too. What else?
Yeah, so I'm good with it. I mean, kids are dumb. If I'm, you know, if I'm a high schooler and I've got a gun, I'm going to take all kinds of pictures with it. You know, magazine in backward, whatever, right? so yeah, I think you're good. So you can seize property in anticipation of getting a search warrant, and so that's what we're doing here. We have probable cause to believe there's evidence of crime in that backpack. So we're going to seize it in anticipation of getting a search warrant.
Zach?
I mean, you can seize it with reasonable suspicion too, briefly.
Yep.
So even if you only had RS on the phone, you could briefly see that the phone and the backpack. So either way, you're good to go. And then your investigation, get your warrant.
If all you have is they caught this guy with a gun in school, and he does have a cell phone on him, and you were the judge, are you going to give that warrant just with the rationalization? Huh?
Not without some kind of articulation as to why it's reasonably there's evidence of a crime on there. Like he was just articulating.
I tend to agree. I mean, I'm sure there's something there. Like, how they even find the gun? If word is spreading around the school that he has a gun, maybe that's the nexus. So forth. I think I agree with Johnny that we're probably going to get that warrant. I don't think it's going to be that hard. These kids do. I think that's part of it. These kids do like to brag about their burner. But if all we have is, a school security guard saw the imprinting of a firearm, found the firearm, and he has a phone. If I was a judge, I would not give a warrant based on nothing more than that. But you would need something. But I think we're close.
Yeah, there's a lot of case law out there, right? I mean, Supreme Court case law. The word is we weigh the governmental interest against the infringement of the individual's rights, and the governmental interest here is huge, huge.
For the phone, yeah. Definitely getting the phone. Yeah, please.
Yeah. So if the parents, because the parents were like ready to fight my officer if my officer attempted to take this backpack.
Were the parents big? Were the parents kind of a large people? I picture a large people.
I think my officer won that fight.
Okay, but I'm just wondering. I'm just curious. Go on.
aside from maybe possible assault charges on that, Arizona, we have a opposing the police law, Phoenix in particular, there's even a city code for it. If we're demanding them to take the, to turn over the backpack and they are saying, no, we're not going to, would it be an appropriate arrest at that point to arrest them for not turning over that backpack?
Johnny?
Yes.
I agree. Yes. Right? Yeah. That's cool. Classic obstruction, right? I mean, you're giving a lawful order. They are obstructing your duty. They're causing you to have to go hands-on and, absolutely. That's not lawful behavior if you have the authority to, and just like what Zach said, even with reasonable suspicion, drop the damn bag,
Okay, perfect.
Yeah. All right. Give them some coupons to Dairy Queen, they'll in exchange for the bag. They'll take it. They're rational people. Okay. They're rational people. All right, guys. Thank you, my friend. And so this has been a great show. Zach, I appreciate your time. John, you got a class in the morning. You got to be there bright and early. They're a good bunch of people. You're going to be teaching a bunch of troopers. And bring your A game for your jokes because they love to laugh. You know that.
Yes, sir. Very excited about it.
All right. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Any last words? Anything you want to say, Zach, before you go?
No, great show tonight, John.
Good. Let me cut you off. Yep. So I'll give the last word here. John and Zach, they have all their classes on bluetogold.com. Please, please, please go to bluetogold.com right now. Okay, right now and look up their classes and see where they're going to be at and see if you can get into one of their classes. You will not be disappointed. They are top-notch instructors and you know that. You can see it right here. So, and we love the debates. I appreciate you guys' time. Have a good night. Stay safe and spread the word about Blue to Gold. Thanks, guys.